Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me, as always, is the big red machine, Bob Finkbeiner.
How you doing?
And of course, the captain of this voyage is our producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
And our newest staff member has returned for week number two. Dr. Garrett Britton is also in the house with us.
Hey, hey.
This guy, he's better than WebMD, folks. So this week, we are going to tackle everything that's going on with our clubs in spring training. We're also going to have a musical guest, a new little segment I like to call Sunday Soapbox. We're going to see how that one goes. And we'll wrap it up with tweet mails. Tweet mails.
Yeah, we're sticking with that.
Still going with tweet mails.
Okay. Anything better.
Just wanted to make sure that tweet mails was still in order.
There. For now it is.
Yeah, until we get a better tweet about what we should call our tweeting segment.
We're waiting, folks.
Still waiting. Still waiting.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet.
And that brings us to Dr. Garrett Britton's medical updates for all of our clubs. Dr. Garrett, what's going on with everybody this spring?
Hey, thanks for having me again. We're going to start off with an update on last week's segment. Frank Herrmann went under the knife on Wednesday.
Dr. Altcheck.
Old Tommy John. He's going to be out this entire season, but hopefully some good things.
What's the upside for Tommy John? I mean, you hear typically the general time frame is a year, but what's the upside in returning? Is there
a year? I mean, it's not going to be a whole lot.
It's not any sooner than that.
No.
Okay.
One of the things that's kind of going around the internet, gaining some steam on different Indian sites, is actually that this could be pretty rough for Herrmann in regards to his status with the Indians, because now he's been. He actually hasn't been put on the 60-day DL yet, but he will. And probably the clearest spot for either Kazmir or, Giambi or someone like that. Aunt Rayburn, maybe. But he will remain on the 40-man all year and be Super 2 eligible next year in the beginning of the season when he's probably still not going to be able to pitch. And so it's kind of possible, if you look at the business part of baseball, that he could end up off the 40-man at this time next year just because they don't want to pay him a Super 2 arbitration salary to come back from Tommy John. So we'll see what happens with Herrmann.
Let me add it real fast. I know I'm not the doctor, but in regards to Tommy John, it's been almost customary from what I read around MLB that it's about a 2-year process to come fully back all the way from Tommy John surgery.
That's what you hear, and that's kind of what you're seeing with Dice K.
Yeah, 18 months is kind of the median. You know, on the upside, you've got it 12 months and, 2 years, if it's someone you want to be completely sure about. This is a pretty major reconstructive surgery of the elbow. It's pretty impressive procedure.
It kind of gets lost sometimes because of how commonly it occurs.
Right. You've got, 5-6 guys coming back, pretty quick within the next 2 months coming off of it. And,
Even if you just look at the Indians alone, Blake Wood's coming back from Tommy John, Josh Tomlin's on Tommy John, Carlos Carrasco's coming back from Tommy John, Frank Herrmann just got Tommy John.
Wasn't it Dr. Andrews the other day, were we talking about that, who said he gets irritated about how because he's been performing this operation so many times and people say, oh, look at how easily these guys are coming back and they're coming back stronger. He's getting kind of agitated with how people are just kind of like poo-pooing this whole
thing. He's kind of on a campaign to inform people just like, it's a rumor. It's impossible for me to reconstruct an elbow stronger than it was already constructed.
Right.
Like I cannot make it what it once was.
Yeah,
if you think that,
sure,
you're just wrong. What else the Indians have going on?
Yeah, out of Cleveland,
in the triage.
Matsuzaka coming back from that right calf injury. He was on Saturday, and he seems to be doing all right.
Right.
Nothing too concerning. And then Yan Gomes, the hamstring.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about, he claims it was a hamstring cramp. I don't hear the hamstring cramp too often. To me, that sounds like a made-up word to mask a strain.
That makes it sound a little better than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a strain. And he was, let's say this was on Friday, and he came out, said it was feeling pretty tight, a little uncomfortable, crampish, if you will.
Technical term.
they're going to sit him out 3 or 4 days, you know, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, try him again.
Right.
You know, get some good stretching.
I think they
and PT
have an off
in
day
there.
Tuesday, so I yeah. think he's saying he'll probably be back Wednesday.
Yeah, but his outlook looks good.
He's definitely, I mean, the word on around town, I guess, is it's the worst kept secret in Indians camp that Gomes is not going to make the roster. They're really impressed with this spring, but he's not going to make the roster, so obviously they don't want to rush it. They want him to get healthy so he can go to Columbus and work on catching every day.
Right. No real need to push it then.
Yeah.
All right, then over to Detroit. Avisail Garcia with this heel contusion, which kind of is an interesting injury. I guess he did it jumping on the bag.
Yeah, going to first base in the second inning.
Yeah, so... They did some x-rays and MRI, and there were no definite fractures, which is really great for him. So a contusion, you can think of kind of like a bruise. And some people may say, well, it's a bruise of the bone, which isn't true. The bone is actually covered by a layer of connective tissue. And when you get a contusion, it's this layer called the periosteum that you damage, you get some inflammation. They put him on day-to-day. But seeing him on crutches and a walking boot, you got to wonder.
We're looking more like probably a couple weeks?
Possibly, yeah. Probably sooner, but worst case, a couple weeks.
Okay. I mean, I would assume it's spring, so typically you think spring and you think taking caution. Your time and yeah. not rushing. So I would assume that they would be as cautious as they needed to be.
Walking boots aren't good, though.
No, not a good sign. Then over to Pittsburgh, Chase Darnold with this left thumb sprain. It might be pretty significant of an injury. They did an MRI and it shows a partial tear, which makes it a second degree sprain when you have partial tear of the ligament. And this generally doesn't resolve without surgery.
And I know with Darnold, at least if there is any positive in any kind of injury, a lot of his value is generated with his legs, with his speed. So, you know, fortunately, at least he kept that intact.
Right, right. It may not affect him so much. And it was his left hand. Well, and this was something he said. He said that it felt like any other sprained finger. After he was told the results, he was really surprised that it was torn. And this kind of speaks to these injuries. You know, these players get these injuries and may not think it's so bad when they, you know, actually are pretty severe. This particular injury is pretty common. It's also known as the skier's thumb because skiers will injure it holding the pole and get this injury. 3 to 4 months recovery after surgery.
Not good for him.
No.
I think they're going to find someone to fill that bench spot for him while he's gone, that's for sure. They're not holding that seat for him.
That's tough when you're trying to make the bench spot on a roster and you're out for 3 to 4 months. It kind of doesn't exist anymore when you come back.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can find someone that's about 42 years old, though, to come in and play for Pittsburgh.
Jason Giambi.
No, he's ours. So can't have him.
All right. Well, you talked us out of it.
This is tough.
Well, that's the update for this week. Hopefully it's an uneventful week, and we'll see you next time.
Probably not with the Indians, the way things are going.
Yeah, we love hearing from you, but we hate hearing from you, because every time we have to play that drop, that means that someone else is hurt. That's bad news. Well, let's start off with the Tribe spring training, Jason, and let's see what's going on with Cleveland.
All right, well, had a good year this week. There were some actual significant roster moves, moving towards actually constructing an opening day roster. Rich Hill was added to the 40-man roster. That pretty much means he's going to make the opening day bullpen. So that's at least one left-hander Terry Francona will have out there. It's a little bit of a mystery as to why Hill, who was on a minor league deal, was added to the 40-man in the middle of March. It happened the same day that Ben Francisco was given his release. And apparently Francisco had an agreement with the Indians that if he felt he could find a better job elsewhere, than he could ask for his release. And obviously with the Yankees outfield situation, he felt and was correct, as he was immediately signed by the Yankees, that he could get better employment there. So the idea kind of is just that Hill had a similar clause that either I'm added to the 40 man by such a date or I can ask for my release. So he kind of forced the Indians' hand there. Then on Friday, Terry Francona announced that Cody Allen will be in the opening day bullpen. So that means Perez, Pastano, Smith, Hill, and Allen. Leaves one left-handed spot, potentially. I mean, obviously he doesn't have to have two lefties, but that would be ideal. That would be either Hagedone, Huff, or Barnes. Personally, Hagedone has looked pretty electric this spring, and he has the much better stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if he makes the bullpen. And as far as another right-hander, it's between Albers, Shaw, and Capps. Capps can actually, even it's kind of strange since he used to be such a successful closer, but he's on a minor league deal. He can be sent to the minors. He has no recourse against that. Shaw has options left, so he can be sent to the minors. Albers has a guaranteed almost $2 million contract. He can't be sent to the minors. There was some belief in the beginning when they acquired Albers from as part of the Chu trade that he was just going to be flipped at a later date because the Indians have so much bullpen depth. People think, why will they pay $2 million for Albers when they have probably realistically three or four at least other guys in the minors who can pitch just as well as Albers for a minimum salary. So we'll see what happens there. There's also some swirling still about the 13-man pitching staff to open the year. It just seems to be gaining some momentum, this idea that if we bring Carrasco up and let him sit for 6 days, his suspension will be over. We can option him back to Columbus. And then when we really need a spot starter or we really need an emergency starter because someone's hurt, we can bring him up. Whereas if we don't do this, we can only bring him up and have to wait 6 days.
Sit on him.
Because yeah. That's a really bad situation to be in. And it seems like Giambi is the one whose position is going to be in flux there. The rumors are that Giambi has such a good relationship with Francona and Antonetti that he will basically wait the week. Like, they can release him, they can do whatever they want, use his spot for Carrasco, and then he'll come back.
What a guy.
What a guy. You know, they can send him to the minors, whatever, you know, he'll accept, you know.
Selfless.
That seems to be the...
He said, you can release me, and I'm not going to sign with all these other teams rushing to come sign me.
That seems to be the...
Don't worry, I'll wait.
Momentum that's gaining.
That's awful. I'm sorry, I can't help it anymore. The guy is 42 years old. If he's a great presence, then hire him as a bench coach.
He hit a home run last night.
Well...
I hope he gets MVP votes this year. That's what I hope.
We'll see what happens.
Rub
there.
Bob's nose in that.
Carrasco, since we're talking about him, he had what looked like a good outing last night against the Giants. He went 5 innings, gave up 2 hits and 1 run, struck out 5 and didn't walk anyone. If you look at the Giants lineup last night, there were about 2 names I recognized. And the names I recognized were like Joaquin Arias and like Gregor Blanco or something. I mean, these aren't like, you know, we're not talking about facing Joey Votto or Buster Posey or anybody of any
Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah. Obviously, Joey Votto's not on the Giants. I'm just saying in general. The only other thing I want to talk about is a little bit about some of the Indians players' performance in the WBC. Carlos Santana actually leads the entire WBC in walks with 8, which is a great sign since that's such a big part of his game. His OPS right now is 1.229 with on base over 500.
Not too bad.
He's really clipping along right now. He's got 2 home runs, 11 total bases. He hit an absolute monster home run yesterday against Puerto Rico.
That was a bomb last night. Yesterday.
Yeah, it was an absolute bomb. I think Matt Vasgersian yelled out, "Oyo, come over!" Sailed over the... I think it went in the second deck. So... Santana's looking good, and he actually looks pretty athletic behind the plate. He had a runner thrown out that Robbie Cano booted the ball, frankly, although the announcers blamed Santana for it. So it'll be interesting to see how he does this year. Mike Aviles has had a really good WBC for Puerto Rico. He's hitting 292 with a home run and 8 RBIs. And against the USA, I think it was last week, he looked really good in the field. He made a couple really nice plays from shortstop. So it'll be interesting to see how guys like Cabrera and Kipnis and even Chisenhall go throughout the year when they have an actual sub that can come in for them that the manager's not afraid to put in for them, because they're not gonna, it's not like putting Luis Valbuena in for Asdrubal Cabrera or anything. So that'll be something to watch. There were a lot of roster moves this week. They kind of trimmed down their group in camp, optioning guys like McDade and Fedorov back. Laporta got reassigned to the minors. I don't think he ever took an at bat because his hip is still bulky, I guess. I don't know what the word is there.
Poor Matt Laporta.
And with the roster kind of shaping up here, it really looks like Zeke Carrera is going to be put on waivers before too long. So we'll see what happens.
Hello, New York.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, he certainly doesn't have the traditional New York skill set. You know, light hitting, speedy, but they don't really have much of a choice right now.
This time they'll take anybody that has MLB service.
If he can,
and it's cheap.
If he can figure out how to put the glove on his hand and trot out there, they'll take him. So that's what's going on from the Indians camp.
Sounds like we have a lot going on in Indians camp. Let's transition over to Detroit and see what's going on with the Tigers and Bob.
Well, one of the biggest stories out of Lakeland this past week was the release of Brendan Bosch. So you can remove him from the left field and right field competition in Tigers camp. Yeah, down to six. he was actually quoted in the, I want to say, Detroit Free Press or Detroit News, saying that he was very thankful to Detroit for the release because they gave enough time to sign somewhere else. He's put on waivers. He cleared waivers because I wanted the contract.
Hello, New York.
Hello, New York. Yes. Quickly grabbed him up with a one-year deal worth $1.5 million and some bonuses, possibly. So it'll be interesting. The guy is not an all-star, I would say, but he's definitely serviceable.
If you think about
a bench player.
You think about his first year when he came up. Was that 2010 with Detroit? Yeah. I mean, he had a great rookie campaign. I mean, if he can produce any... where close to that level, I would think that the Yankees have an absolute bargain on their hands.
And then the following season, 2011, he actually had a much better season. It was last season that with the injuries and struggles he had to play that he kind of, his value kind of dropped a little bit. But
and when, it, his, when his swing is right,
right, and then
he can really...
Left-hand hitter playing in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. So
you've seen
know.
What you've seen what it does. Raul Ibanez. Hello, Raul.
Transition from Bosch is the update on Bruce Rondon. He's now gone four straight appearances without allowing a run. He's shown better control and consistently hitting the 100 mile per hour on the radar gun, which makes the fans in Lakeland very happy and smiling. So, but he was, I guess, reported that Leland said that he does not have to be the closer to break camp with the big club.
Just needs to be one of those bullpen arms.
Right.
Closer by committee.
Jim Leland does not want that stress in the ninth inning again.
No,
seriously,
his
blood pressure cannot handle it.
The fifth starter update between Porcello and Smiley. Porcello continues to pitch very well, now up to 18 innings pitched with no walks, 18 Ks, and a fantastic ERA of 2.5. His whip is a remarkable 0.78.
Woohoo!
Now, the counterpart in this battle, Drew Smiley, had a rough outing today where he went four innings, allowing seven hits and five earned runs, which now pushes his spring stats to 16 and 13 innings pitched, 12 Ks, ERA of 3.86. There continues to be talk, and I don't know why this is, about making Porcello a closer.
Now, do you really think Porcello has the stuff to be a closer?
No, I don't know why you would want him to be a closer. Their talk was, Dombrowski came out today or yesterday, saying that they foresee possibly having Smiley or Porcello, who does not win the rotation spot, pitch out of the bullpen.
If you use wins above replacement as a barometer for the value of a player, when you look at a starting pitcher who throws 200 innings versus a relief pitcher who throws 70 innings, I don't care how many saves you rack up, the value of a player diminishes. I mean, it's almost exponentially. Like you go from being, you know, maybe a 4-win player as a really good pitcher all the way down to if you have an exceptional year in the bullpen, you know, you're losing a whole win and a half.
Right.
So, I mean, as far as value goes, you would think that they would want to do everything they can to maximize the value out of all their players.
Absolutely. And to me, Porcello is young enough still. He's still very, very young. Let him pitch in that fifth spot. He's showing more growth and development. He may end up being a very, very serviceable guy in that role.
He's very young. They rushed him,
right,
like the Tigers always do.
Always do.
He's much younger than you realize because of how long he's already been in the league.
And he's one of the few guys that they've rushed that actually has remained healthy, too. think back to the other guys that have either gotten wild, they got hurt. You know, he's actually still, pretty much injury free.
He's only 24, yet he
has like 5-6 years in the.
He's been in the majors for four. This will be his fifth year in the majors.
Right.
He's already thrown almost 700 innings.
So he's practically a seasoned veteran in that rotation.
When most players are just getting their first or second season.
And he's at the point now where hopefully you're going to see him blossom into more of the pitcher that they thought he was when they drafted him originally, which still has a lot of high upside. Right. So we'll see what happens. But I like him to get that spot nailed down here soon and then move forward, him pitching in rotation, not closing. And then lastly, some assignments were made this past week of news interest for the Erie area and the Seawolves. You will have the chance to see Daniel Fields back in center field for the Erie Seawolves this summer. You're also going to have a chance to see Dixon Machado, who is highly regarded as one of the best defensive prospects the Tigers have. And along with him, the guy that they acquired in the Andy Oliver trade, Ramon Cabrera from Altoona Curve, will also be in Erie.
Is Machado an infielder?
Yes, he is.
They could use some infield defense.
And actually have quite a selection of middle infield talent. I don't think it's as strong as it is in Cleveland. But defensively, they look pretty sharp.
You know who I'm excited for is Raleigh Bishop. He's my favorite Erie Seawolf. I hope he's back this year.
He is one of the best all-time baseball names I think ever.
Raleigh Bishop.
And Casey Crosby was assigned to Toledo also.
Well, sounds like we had a lot going on in Detroit as well. After that, we're going to take a look at Pittsburgh and what's going on in their camp. We had the typical minor league assignments. Jameson Taillon was optioned to AA Altoona, along with Matt Haig, Anderson Hernandez, Darren Ford, Eric Cordier, Vic Black, Stolmy Pimentel, Hunter Strickland, Duke Welker, Clint Robinson, and surprisingly Jerry Sands were all optioned to AAA. I thought Pittsburgh was going to give a little longer look at Sands. There was a lot of talk about him possibly being one of those bench spots for Pittsburgh, but they outrighted him to AAA to give him some time down there, I guess, get some more at-bats. Jeff Karstens threw 26 pitches across two innings against the Phillies AAA players. He's on pace to join the rotation at the beginning of the season as of right now, so if there's no more speed bumps or anything else like that before the season starts, he should be in our rotation. Garrett Jones also coming off of an oblique injury, is that what it was? I think it was it was listed as tightness in his left side, I think is what they said. He swung in an indoor cage on Wednesday. He took live BP on Thursday and was back in action on Friday, promptly going 2-for-3. So hopefully everything is okay on that front. Garrett Jones is going to be kind of an important cog in our lineup, especially, you know, after looking at last season and what he did. So we're kind of hoping that he'll be able to repeat that this season. And I thought this was kind of neat. According to Tom Singer on Twitter, this is the first time in 34 games. This is talking about, this was May 7th, was that? It was on Friday. So May 15th? May 15th.
Yes.
Jonathan Sanchez threw on Friday. And it was the first time
March 15th.
Or March 15th, yeah, not May, jeez. It was the first time in 34 games, so it was since May of 2011, that Jonathan Sanchez pitched more than one inning without walking a batter.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. Hey. Okay. Bravo.
So we will get him a nice little ice cream cone at the stand after the game. We're all proud of Jonathan Sanchez. Great job.
He gets a dilly bar after the game.
I miss those days. I really do miss those days. Other than that, not a whole lot else going on in Pirates camp. We still have Garrett Cole, throwing. He's still in camp right now. Looked good the other day. So we're just hoping everyone stays healthy until the regular season gets started.
Let me ask real fast about Jerry Sands. How likely did you think he had a chance making the club this spring anyway with, you know, Tabata and Snyder and Garrett Jones' ability to play not only first but also the corner outfield spot?
Well, initially, coming into the season with the way that Tabata finished last season, I thought Jerry Sands had a really, really good shot at breaking camp with the team because he is kind of one of those, you kind of plug him in, corner infield, you know, corner outfield spot if you needed to. And then, you know, Tabata came in and, you know, like we said the other week, he really didn't want to go back and ride the bus. He wanted to be on the major league team. He looks like he's playing hard. He's in great shape with that, you know, again, that positive spring talk. He's Tabata came into camp. Best shape of his life. So, and you know, Sands has pop. That's the one thing that Jerry Sands has that especially now is in short supply in the major leagues. He has pop. You know, everything else, we're not sure, but he can hit the ball far. So I was kind of shocked. I really thought they would give him a longer look, especially since he was a key piece in the Hanrahan trade.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is what it is. He'll get his shot in AAA, and if he hits down there.
Or could possibly be foreshadowing a Garrett Jones deal later on in the year.
That could also be, too. Garrett Jones has been, there's been a lot of banter the last year and a half, 2 years about Garrett Jones. You know, you hear constantly Garrett Jones to the Yankees because they need another 25 home run guy on their roster. So
they have lost like, it's almost like 200 home runs off their roster last year.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of change in New York as far as between injuries and free agency.
As far as when the year starts, because right. You count A-Rod won't be there.
Tex won't be there.
Granderson.
Swish is in Cleveland.
Granderson. Swisher's gone. Abanez.
Yeah. He's in Seattle now.
Abanez is in Seattle.
Right,
yeah.
So
Abanez is gone.
Right, so it's one of those things that kind of racks up, you know, when you kind of hear the stories and you're like, oh, poor Yankees. Ooh. Cry me a river. But when you look at it.
Hey, they could have signed Manny Ramirez.
They could
have. They didn't, though.
He's signed by some Japanese.
He's playing in Japan. Well, we're going to have our musical guest this week, Sunday at the Station. We're going to be listening to a song called Lost My Mind, so we'll be back after this musical break.
I have lost the time. Which way do I turn now? It all looks the same. Is this a bad dream or am I to blame? Am I asleep or am I just lost in my mind? The table is up, the table is down. I'm spinning in circles, I have lost the time. Which way do I turn now? It all looks the same. Is this a bad dream or am I to blame? Am I asleep or am I just lost in my mind?
And that is Lost in My Mind by Sunday at the Station. They're a folk Americana band from the Meadville, Pennsylvania area. All three band members are from the northwestern Pennsylvania region. Matt Marr is the main vocalist who plays the banjo and guitar. Donnie Consla is vocals, guitar, and also the mandolin. Don't hear a lot of the mandolin in bands nowadays. And Scott Stearns is the bass guitar player and has the background vocals. They're currently on a bit of hiatus as one of their band members, Donnie, is in veterinary school in California. But hopefully they'll be getting back together to have some more of this fantastic music, because they really do have a very unique sound. You said, Bob, they're heavily influenced by the Avett Brothers?
Avett Brothers, yes.
Yeah, so it's a unique sound. You don't hear a lot of it mainstream music, so always good to hear something new and different. You can preview and purchase their music on iTunes and at cdbaby.com. You can also check them out on Facebook by searching for Sunday at the Station and like their page on Facebook. So again, we hope for the sake of good music, these guys get back together soon, because their music is absolutely fantastic. Now we're going to transition into my new segment for this week, because I tell you what, I was getting a little frustrated this weekend, having a little Twitter conversation back and forth. This is going to be a little segment I like to call Soapbox Sunday, or Sunday Soapbox. I'm not sure which way I'm going to twist it around there.
J.R. House.
Oh boy. Let's take all that disgust and despair and pay it off.
Just, yeah, step off.
Ooh.
Kind of a grit guy myself. Mm.
Keep talking there, Andy.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Al.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise the Jolly Roger.
Sal Fasano.
Sal Fasano.
Oh, Sal Fasano. That's never going to get old. The stash. Sal Fasano. So I had a conversation on Twitter with someone this week about the World Baseball Classic, and I made an off-the-cuff tweet, like all my tweets are. I really don't think them out very much. I just tweeted something along the lines of, I'm glad the World Baseball Classic is over, and everyone came out mostly unharmed, except for David Wright, who is a casualty of my fantasy team.
But Captain America, according to Matt Vasgersian.
Vasgersian had to have been so sad when David Wright got hurt, just the tears of Vasgersian. I wish we could bottle the tears of Vasgersian.
Yeah, but he still managed to work that into the game about 10 times.
Oh, yeah. You know he's got the camera guy down there. Hey, put the camera on David Wright. I got to say my Captain America.
And of course, thing. All this is happening without Captain America on the field.
But so I'd said that on Twitter. I'm just glad everybody came out mostly unscathed in the World Baseball Classic. I didn't really care about Team USA winning or losing. I was just happy that the exhibition was over and everyone came through mostly unharmed. And someone on Twitter did not take... I think he's a guy that's tweeted to us before. Lunchbox Joe, at Lunchbox Joe. He's tweeting back and forth and he's saying...
Umbrage.
Yeah, he was not... He did not like my point of view that I think the World Baseball Classic is just an exhibition. He thought more of how it represents our country and that it should be a more important... I guess people should look at it more as like a pride thing where we should want Team USA to win. And we had a good 45-minute long tweet fest of our varying points of view on this. And I guess my whole thing is, with the World Baseball Classic, it is completely an exhibition. There's no real prize at the end. It's not like the World Series where that's what you're playing towards, this ultimate goal. You know, there... I guess we were talking before we started recording. Apparently there is some money involved.
There is some money involved, but it's more bragging rights than anything else.
Exactly. So it's not like there's anything to be gained from playing in it. There's only things to be lost, from my point of view.
I guess I understand your point of view, but I do have to sympathize with Lunchbox Joe a little. It's a little disheartening to see the Dominican players or the Puerto Rican players so into... the game. Like, I think it was against Puerto Rico on Thursday night, was it? The U.S. played Puerto Rico?
Was it Thursday? Yeah.
Maybe it was Wednesday.
Wednesday or Thursday.
Anyways, when the game shifted, you know, it was a close game, the whole game. When the game shifted and they took the lead, the look of just complete, you know, overwhelming joy and satisfaction and we're going to beat these guys on the Puerto Rican players' faces... I was kind of like, oh man,
it reminded
make us look like a bunch of idiots right now.
It reminded me a lot of that little segment in Pilotero where the they were interviewing the Dominican teenagers that were in camp, and the teenagers were like, yeah, we're way better than American players because we work way harder than them. It did kind of make it kind of reminded me of that mentality where they're out there to beat you because they want to show you that they're the best,
right?
But I don't think that's a good mentality to have in spring training. This is a time where, and here's the big debate that's been going back and forth from what I've collected as far as this goes, is that people are saying you need to come into spring training and warm up to it, which I kind of agree with. You know, you're coming off 2 months off where you're probably not doing nearly the same amount of vigorous exercise that you're doing in season or when you're preparing for the season. And now you're put in this ultra competitive environment where everybody's going from 0% at the beginning of spring training to 100% right away.
I got something to say about that.
Well, this is interesting. There was actually a study conducted by a group of guys down at William Beaumont Army Medical Center in El Paso, Texas. And what they did was they looked at all of the injuries from the 2002 season to the 2008 season. And the purpose of this study was to kind of... bring some evidence forward of starting this injury database for the MLB. But what they found was, in all seven seasons, the highest injury rate occurred during April. And like you're saying, Andy, these players are coming back, you know, from a couple months off. They're thinking, you know, this is, you know, the end of last season. Nothing's changed. My body is the same way it was, you know, 3 months ago, and that they can be throwing and running and catching the way they were then. And it's just not true. It's interesting that the lowest rate of injuries was in September. You know, towards the end of the season, things gearing down. It was actually a tenfold increase in injuries between April and September.
See that, Jason? I've got science on my side.
But here's what I'm saying. When they tell me, oh, David Wright, or I'm sorry, Captain America.
Captain America.
Captain America is out of the game tonight because his back is hurt. My first response was, yeah, big surprise. What is this April, May, June, July, August, or September? It could, I mean, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I do believe that, you know, if you step out of your sofa where you've been running wind sprints from the couch to the fridge and back for the last 3 months, and you know, you're Chris Perez and you step on the mound the first day of spring training throwing aspirin tablets and you hurt your arm, it's like, oh, big surprise, you know. But like, I Vinny Pastano started his throwing program at home 3 weeks before spring training started because he knew he was going to be in the WBC. And so it's kind of, you know, I mean, yeah, if you waltz into spring training the first day totally unprepared to begin actual game action in 2 weeks, no, that doesn't surprise me that you would hurt yourself. You know, I guess in a way I'm a little more fatalistic about it. Like, if David Wright's going to hurt his back, he's going to hurt his back, whether it's in the middle of March during WBC or the middle of April, because David Wright has a bulky back.
My big issue with it, again, like, as a Pirates fan, it would bother me if Andrew McCutchen went to the World Baseball Classic, got hit by a fastball on the wrist or something by someone who's trying to pump up a fastball, and broke his wrist and was out for 3 to 4 months. I think it's more unnecessary risk that you don't need to have, because it doesn't really affect anything. And, you know, I get there should be some sense of national pride or whatever, but I don't really care. I care about the regular season. I care about the Pirates' well-being. It's cool if Team USA wins. It does not affect me one iota as a baseball fan, whether they advance to the finals or not, or whether
And I know what you mean. I guess it's just, you know, I saw, like, when that inning ended the other night, where Puerto Rico took the lead, and whoever it was grounded out to Brandon Phillips, and Phillips just really slowly fielded the ball, stood straight as an arrow up, and lobbed it to first base. You know, you could tell there was a lot of pride that just vanished from Marlin Stadium at that moment. And so it's like, you can't really take out they're athletes and they're competing, and I believe that they do get pumped up trying to represent their country. So I guess my feeling is, I just don't want to do it halfway. You know, like, I don't want to go out and get beat by Puerto Rico.
Or Italy
throwing R.A. Dickey and Ryan Vogelsong when C.C. Sabathia is sitting on his recliner in Florida. You know, it's just,
well, that's,
if we're going to do this, let's do it. If we're not going to do it, then let's send a bunch of college kids.
That's the other thing. I mean, if you want to use it as just a purely, like, we should win and you should have national pride, we didn't have Justin Verlander or C.C. Sabathia or... And I'm not going to... And people are like, oh, that's just an excuse. It is an excuse. Like, if we go throw Justin Verlander out there, we're going to win against whoever we start against, you know. And other people are saying, like, oh, well, you should force these players to play. I would love to see Major League Baseball go up against the players' union and say, your players have to play in this exhibition at the beginning of the season. I just don't, because it's not an integral part of the season, I just don't think I place as much value on it as I would as the Pirates finishing their season above 500 or making the playoffs. Like, that to me has more value than Team USA winning in the World Baseball Classic, I guess. So, I don't know.
I like all those points. They make a lot of sense. It's, you don't want to have a player on your team get hurt, obviously, and affect your main club's interests in the whole season. At the same time, I agree with Jason where, you know, if we're going to represent this World Baseball Classic, you know, I want to win as a USA. I want to root for USA. I want them to see them win. Especially when we look at the Dominican Republic's roster, Puerto Rico's roster, and most of the top players are playing for those countries. What I want to propose out there for a moment is how much of their, I guess, participation is reflected by the idea that, hey, it's America. It's a big powerhouse in the world. It's their own game, primarily. We want to beat them.
Right. No, I think you could see that. When Puerto Rico took the lead, it was late in the game and both teams had good bullpens and you knew whoever scored that run was going to win. And the look on their face was, we just beat them. Yeah. We just took their game away from them.
Right.
Not just this game, you know, and that was the look on Brandon Phillips' face was, we just lost this.
And Pastano apologized to everybody on Twitter.
I mean,
he felt so bad letting the country down.
Right. he pitched, I think it was the next night, gave up the two runs that knocked him out of the tournament.
Right.
You know, and he's, I think, had three or four tweets right in a row profusely apologizing, saying, you know, this is something that's going to stay with me and I feel so bad, I let my country down, you know. So it's like, I guess to me, it's the thing is, all that competition, all that competitive spirit is already there. So let's at least send our best crew out there, you know, instead of getting waxed by the Puerto Ricans with half of a USA team.
Well, I guess some of us are going to have to agree to disagree on this topic. But Lunchbox Joe, I appreciate the interaction. Hopefully, maybe we'll find a topic that we agree on for next episode so we can talk about things that we share in common.
Compromise, working together.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Resolving conflict.
So let's transition into...
Before you get into that, I do want to say...
One more thing?
I don't know if it's going to be available later, but on STO right now is the Indians-Reds spring training game. And if you can catch a replay of that later, not only is it a score fest like all Indians-Reds spring training games are, but Tyler Naquin, Carlos Moncrief, Francisco Lindor, Tony Wolters... They've all been in since at least about the fifth inning. So, you know, if you want to get a chance to see these guys, if you're not going to be able to travel around and see them during the year, this is a great chance, a great opportunity to watch them play.
A lot of prospects. So keep your eyes out for that game if you want a chance to see some young Indians prospects. Now let's transition into Tweet Mails.
Yes.
Still no better name for that yet. Tweet Mails.
Well, okay. We've been recording. I really haven't had time to think.
So... So our tweet today comes from Logan Batten at Batten47, frequent tweeter of the show. Thanks, Logan. Appreciate it.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast. I don't think we're stealing that from anybody, are we?
Yes, we definitely are.
Logan says, outside of Andrew McCutchen, who do you expect to be the Pirates' most consistent hitter in 2013? Now, I'm actually kind of curious about this from... people who are not traditionally Pirates fans, Bob and Jason, if you had to pick a name out of a hat, who would you hope to pick for the second most consistent hitter in the Pirates lineup? Bob, go ahead.
For me, it would be Neil Walker.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I hope it's Neil Walker.
Yeah.
That would bode well for the Pirates season.
It would, very much.
And Neil Walker's the easy answer. That's why I'm going to go think a little outside the box. We're going to...
Now, if it's my desire, I'd love to see Pedro Alvarez be consistent the whole entire year.
Oh, I would love that too. I would sincerely.
I would go with Gerald Laird.
he's playing for the Atlanta Braves right now.
No, Gerald Laird.
I'd say Russell Martin could have a good year.
We're not
talking consistently performing well, just consistent.
Russell Martin would be
consistent.
A very good dark horse candidate. I want to say he's like a career 260 hitter or something like that.
I feel pretty confident he'll hit 260 this year.
If we get a guy to hit 260 with 20 home runs, you could have a nice little competition. Here's my dark horse. I'm going to go with Starling Marte.
I was going to go there, but I went with Russell Martin.
It's risky. We're going to go a little risky. Starling Marte, we're going to say he learned some plate discipline in the offseason. He's not going to swing at pitches up around his eyeballs anymore. Starling Marte is going to develop into a not super patient hitter, but he's not going to swing at everything like Vladimir Guerrero. So let's say my pick for the second most, and consistent's a very arbitrary term.
I mean, yeah, like Aaron Cunningham was consistent last year. He consistently hit below the Mendoza line. He consistently couldn't hit his weight.
I'm gonna say Starling Marte to finish the year with a 280 average, let's say double digit, 12 home runs and 26 stolen bases.
See, Marte reminds me of a younger, without the power, Vlad Guerrero.
Oh yeah,
anything close to a play is gonna hit it.
He's swinging. Well, like Manny Sanguian says. He says, you know, you don't swing your way off the island. So he's got a very valid point there. You know, it's a style of hitting that they like to teach down there. So I'm going to say Starling Marte learned some discipline.
I think the actual phrase is you don't walk your way off the island.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. You do swing your way off the island. Yeah, you do swing your way off the island. You don't walk your way off the island.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Thank you. Wait, what's your answer for Logan?
For Logan, I'm going to go Starling Marte. I'm going to say Starling Marte makes a going
out on a limb there.
I am.
I'm going to go Russell Martin, I think. I have more confidence that Russell Martin will be the same in April that he is in September than Neil Walker. I think Neil Walker's going to have, I hope Neil Walker's going to have a better season for the Pirates, but I think Russell Martin will be more consistent.
Well, Logan, we hope that addresses your question. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for today's edition of Tri-State at the Plate. We'd like to thank our listeners, as always. We would ask, if you're listening to us on iTunes, that you kindly review our podcast. Reviews drive up our popularity and gain us some more listeners, which we would love to have. You can check us out on the internet at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter at TristateBB, and you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TSMBaseball. So, for Bob, Jason, and Dr. Garrett, this is Andy Burdick, and we'll see you next week. I think I'm wrong.